Okay, welcome to this week's episode of the Swap Meet Podcast. My name is Daniel Hanlon.
My name is Niall McCann.
And how are you, Niall? How are you getting on?
Perfectly good, Dan. Perfectly good. Nothing is changing in the world except the length of my hair.
Oh, yeah, man. Did you see the barbers are open again up the north and the queues waiting to get into them apparently are serious? They're all the way down the street.
I'd nearly go to Newry, yeah. I really could do with a haircut.
I'm getting, Kat shaved mine, I don't know, 5 months ago before Riley was born anyway. And, before I go ahead, I don't know if he still listens to the show, but Donal Fallon had a child.
Oh.
Yeah.
Do you know that?
Randomly on Facebook. Saw it on Facebook, yeah. No idea if Donal still listens, but if he does, congratulations, Donal. Well done.
Mazel tov, Donal.
Yeah. And, you know, if you want top-notch parenting advice, then stay tuned to this podcast when it comes out, because I'm gonna have the market cornered on podcasting dads. So stay with us.
you were wrestling young Riley there. You were telling me.
Oh yeah, no, he trying to get him to take his Calpol. I used to actually like the smell of Calpol, but now it's just oh no, it's Calpol again. You know.
Calpol for everything.
I remember
Kaylee, my sister's eldest, she's fucking 15 now. This is ridiculous, but when she went in to get her shots, Sinead asked me, my sister asked me to go with her to hold her down because Sinead couldn't look at the doctor giving her the injection.
Really?
So wow. I did, and she was wrestling and she was mad, and then we took her around to my granny's for a cup of tea, and she just spent the whole time, she must have forgotten it by now, hopefully, but she spent that whole time, we're sitting in nanny's, literally glaring across the table at me, glaring at me. It was like, oh, I'm not going to forgive this one. I'm not getting out of this one.
It's too short. Because of the restrictions, I haven't been in for any of this stuff. Like, since she's been pregnant the whole way through, I haven't been in any scans, like any of that kind of stuff. Like, you know, but...
Oh, yeah.
So I haven't been in anything, and...
You're like a 50s dad.
Yeah, I was just waiting. Well, no, the birth, I was there for the whole thing from the second one. So, actually, they were really cool, about it, because I assumed that as soon as the baby was born, it was going to be like, right, now you hit the streets for a few hours, but no, I got to hang out all there. I got all my meals there, it was grand, cool. Actually. Well, because it was the MLU, cool. She had her own room, you know, so it was like every sort of few hours they'd come around like, well, what would you have for your dinner? Like, I'll have the
con. What's the MLU?
Midwife-led unit. Midwives, as opposed to the maternity ward.
Okay, cool. Sorry,
just
kicked
something there. But so I got me... it was kind of weird.
Got your cod.
Yeah, I got my cod for my dinner. And then there was lunch... And you get your little hospital, fruit salads that you get in the little vacuum pack, But they came with early, because we got there about 5 a.m. And at about, I don't know, when they came in with Rice Krispies for me at a certain point. And Kat was kind of in the throes of it. And I was kind of, I'm just going to finish these. I just don't want to waste them.
Starving children in Africa.
Well, this was everything had sort of started at 6, and this was then 5 a.m. the next morning. With her, it was 6 or 7 in the evening, that's when things started happening, and then this was at 5 the following morning, so I was just like, I'm just gonna have these Rice Krispies, sorry. I mean, you're not going anywhere, and I can't do anything about the pain, so.
that sounds cool. Okay, no, that's allowed, so you got looked after.
Yeah,
and I presume... So occasionally people check Kat as well, did they?
Oh, yeah. No, of course, yeah. The same people that came in with the Rice Krispies. No, it wasn't.
I remember hearing one time, you know the way, it was a cliche on TV and stuff where the father would be sent away to get towels and then go boil some water. We need water, go boil some water.
Yeah.
Apparently, that was a standard thing. They did actually ask fathers to do that, but... never got used. It was just to give him something to do.
So it was really just to keep him moving kind of thing.
Yeah, go boil some water. Go boil some water, sir, please. Get out. It's just pointless. Somewhere else in the room. If the kettle's in this room, go boil it somewhere else.
Oh, you'll never feel Harley, as useless I in heard your this. Life.
Okay. Yeah, I wonder if would that work.
Listen, if they'd send me away to boil water, I'd be like, oh, I'm bringing them back the best boiled water that they've ever had. They're going to like this lad obviously took lessons in boiling water, like, you know, and then oh, great stuff, and then just pour it down a sink or something.
This man knows his water and his water. Temperatures.
Excuse me.
Oh, dear old.
But it is so one of those things. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, no, go.
No, all I was going to say is that it is one of those things that you'll never feel that useless in your whole life than you do on that day, because you're just like, can I? No. But what about if I? No, it's not going to help.
What about these tools and implements?
Yeah. Can I use them? I've got some boiled water now. Yeah. What are you going to do? Burn me with it? It's no good.
Okay. Well, look, I'm sure you were a great help to everyone there, Dan.
Yeah, the nurses made me a card.
Did they?
No, they didn't. You were okay. Going to say something and I interrupted you.
Not at all. I was just going to say, tell the people what we do at Swap Meet, Dan.
Oh, well, Niall, on Swap Meet, what we do is we swap pop cultural artifacts, films, TV shows, books and albums and the like. And
We do that.
If you've only started listening in the last two new ones that we've done, you'll know the drill.
Why?
But say that again.
Why?
Yeah, how on earth did you find this fucking thing? But if you're here, you're welcome. You're aiding two friends stay in touch over Zoom.
Yeah.
Because they're not mature enough just to do it without recording it.
Yeah, well, it'd be a shame if our banter went to waste, Dan, obviously.
Exactly.
We drop out these little gems of wisdom all the time.
So, Niall, you got me to watch a film that I really should have seen before, but hadn't. You got me to watch In the Heat of the Night.
Okay, I've got him.
Where's my husband?
I thought I told you to get the hell out of here.
You aren't taking me anywhere. You dig?
You go get yourself killed.
I'm a police officer.
Look, they pay you $162.39 a week just to look at bodies. Why can't you look at this one?
Why can't you look at it for yourself?
I do not want that Negro officer taken off this case.
I need a few things.
Such as
ammonium hydrosulfide, benzidine, superoxide of hydrogen, copper powder, distilled water, calipers, and some toothpicks.
Why won't anybody here tell me what's happened to it?
Are you sure you're pregnant?
Yes, I am pregnant!
I can pull that fat cat down.
I'm afraid you're a little late, Virgil. We already got the guilty man.
May I examine this person?
Yeah, you can look at him. Come on, let him look.
He's left-handed, isn't he?
What's that make him?
Innocent.
I got the motive, which is money, and the body, which is death.
You're holding the wrong man.
But don't you push me, boy!
They call me Mr. Tibbs.
What kind of people are you?
Is that
Ray Charles singing that theme tune, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, yeah. It is Ray Charles.
It's a really good score, actually. You can tell... And we get to it, but you can tell that the later blaxploitation films took a lot from that score.
Yeah, it was Quincy Jones.
Yeah, see, they did a bit more money than the other lads. Like, you know, like they go, well, for In the Heat of the Night, we'll get Quincy Jones. And it's like for Across 110th Street, we might go for Bobby Womack for that one. Like, you know,
Bobby Womack's not bad.
Yeah,
I like
but the thing is, he turned out an amazing. Well, at least I don't know the score that well, but the title track's fucking awesome.
It's a banger. Across 110th Street, pimps trying to catch a woman this week. Across 110th Street, pushers won't let the junkie go free. Across 110th Street, woman trying to catch a trick on the street.
I could be wrong, but I think I've never seen the film Across 110th Street, but I think I read somewhere that the song is fuck all to do with the film. The song is just basically his own life story, pretty much, just with the title of the film in it. Like, you know, I don't know if the story's about the third brother of five doing whatever he had to do to survive. I don't know if that's what the film's about, but I don't think so.
But it was, that's what all of those exploitation films, not just the black exploitation films, were good for. To just hand it out. The money wasn't great, but you could pretty much do what you liked. And they were going to be like, well, I'm not paying somebody else to redo it. So yeah. That's going in the film.
And this, and the soundtrack, like some of that black exploitation soundtrack got reused in like kung fu films and stuff like this. Because there's a channel on YouTube called the Wu-Tang channel that I got in the habit of watching. That's all these kind of old kung fu films. But you can hear some of it is like, wow, 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 you know, like these kind of wah-wah guitars and stuff that have fuck all to do with martial arts, really, like, you know.
Well, it was all good. They were all being shown in the same places, like, weren't they? Weren't they all sort of double bills?
Yeah, yeah. It was all that kind of stuff. And also, it just kind of it adds to the feel of that stuff as well. Like, you know, that I'd rather watch a kung fu film with a 70s blaxploitation soundtrack, you know. It's pretty cool, you know. But so in the heat of the night, was it Sidney Poitier and Rod Steiger? Is that his name?
Rod Steiger.
I really wanted to take the gum out of his mouth at a certain point.
Oh really? I loved it. I thought he was shit cool.
You couldn't chew gum that long. I remember a friend of mine at school used to chew gum all the time, and one day his jaw seized up.
What?
His jaw was open, and he couldn't close it for maybe, like, I don't know, like 45 minutes or something like that. And he had chewed himself into a spot, you know.
I can get my whole fist in there.
Yeah, that kind of thing. But he was chewing that gum pretty aggressively as well.
Yeah, he must have been. I've chewed gum in my life. My jaw's never seized up.
Yeah, but the film takes place over, like, what, 2 days? And no one goes to bed in it at all. They fall asleep on a couch at a certain point, but nobody goes to bed.
I love that scene. Did you know
that scene? Yeah, it's a great scene, actually, yeah.
You know, Virgil, you are among the chosen few.
How's that?
Well, I think that you're the first human being that's ever been in here.
You can't be too careful, man.
You know a lot of things, don't you? Well, just what do you know about insomnia?
Bourbon can't cure it.
Well, that's for sure. Now look, I got no wife, I got no kids. Boy, I got a town that don't want me. Oh, and I got an air conditioner that I have to oil myself. I got a desk with a busted leg, and on top of that, I got this place. Now, don't you think that'd drive a man to take a few drinks?
But when was the first time you would have seen this one, then? Is that...
Oh, I think... Who was your man that used to introduce films late at night on Network 2? Brian Redden? Or Brian Redmond?
Yeah, I think it was, yeah.
Do you remember that guy?
Yeah.
I saw it on his thing. Was it Friday Night Movie or something? Or
that's right,
or
yeah.
Hollywood... I can't remember what it was called.
I think... Well, he used to introduce a film in general on RTE, and he'd always do like 5-minute kind of history about it. Like,
It was cool. And then one night it was In the Heat of the Night. And Sidney Poitier was in it, and I love Sidney Poitier because I'm one of the millions of people who got on board the Sidney Poitier train in his classic career-defining role in Sneakers in the mid-90s.
Is he in that?
This LTX-71 concealable mic is part of the same system that NASA used when they faked the Apollo moon landings. Worked for them, shouldn't give us too many problems.
They break and enter.
How are we doing?
Cause and position on the fire escape. Mother's in the cable vault.
Carrying to sever master circuit.
But they're not thieves.
We're getting too old for this.
They know your secrets.
but they're not spies.
It's gotta be there somewhere.
What's he doing?
I'm like, no, really.
Mr. Bishop, do you mind if I take a look?
Carl, grow up.
I give you something to work, baby.
So people hire you to break into their places to make sure no one can break into their places?
What's the living?
Not a very good one.
And is that a good movie? I've never seen it.
Well, it's a really good... Yeah, I fucking love it. I love
sneakers
it the best of
pieces. For sneaking.
Yeah. It's a really good film. But, well, listen, you're taking... I gotten such a fucking... Niamh walked away from a conversation with me last week because I was
a conversation
defending.
Just between the two of you? Or was there other people in
yeah.
it?
Just okay. Like you could just be like, I'm not talking about this anymore. You're not going to say another word about this. You don't say another word about this, and that's the end of the conversation.
What was it?
I was just defending Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves. I fucking love Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves.
I mean,
it's one of my favorite all-time films.
I haven't seen it in a while. I loved it when I was a kid.
I have. I saw it recently enough, hence the conversation.
And
it was brilliant. It was like, wow, every bit as magnificent as I remember, I said.
And she wasn't having it. Was she getting proper mad? Well,
was she just, she felt I was overstating it. I believe I might have used, well, people love that about Raiders. It's just the Raiders of the 90s. And she was like, Niall, it's fine to like something. It's even fine to like something objectively more than it's necessary to like it. But stop. Just stop. I don't know, okay.
I mean, I can see
well, actually,
what you're saying. It's
I don't
not
think
swinging
I was
around
okay.
like there is in Raiders. When I think of Raiders, just
yeah,
think of Indiana just swinging around and...
yeah, what's the diff for?
I finished reading The Man in the High Castle a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, what did you make of it?
I really enjoyed it, but it just sort of stops, right?
Yeah.
There's no
yeah.
real... Like, there's a bit in it where you're supposed... Because they... spoilers to anyone who's either watching the show or is reading the book or wants to read it. And, you know, they go... She
the
goes
show,
to,
I think, is pretty different.
Oh, is it really that? It would have to be. I don't think you could film this thing. But
yeah, I don't know.
They went to... There's a bit where she goes to the guy who's writing the book that they all read during the book, the book within the book. The Grasshopper
yeah.
Sleeps Tonight, or whatever it's called.
Grasshopper Lies Heavy, I believe.
Yeah,
it
that's
was.
It. And they go to the guy's house. The I Ching is massive in this thing. But and they go to your man's
yeah.
house, and it turns out you wrote
and
the whole thing.
Who bought an I Ching when he was fucking 20?
I remember you talking about this. And I was reading
it
thinking...
Did the fucking oracles and everything?
Yeah, because I remember... I think we talked about it on a podcast before. And I was reading it going, this is obviously... Or maybe it isn't. But this might have been part of where he got the idea to start his I Ching business. Not his I Ching.
No,
not that
I,
had
no
business,
I found
but,
that... yeah, no, I picked up the I Ching before I read Man in the High Castle, but I was fucking hip deep and all that Jungian shit back in the day.
And did you use it in any way? Like, and like I know that you were into it.
Yeah,
you
Would
you ask a
I
question?
Used to do the oracles. Yeah, I used to do the oracles because you can't read it. Like, there's nothing to read in it really. Like, you
okay.
know. So yeah, I used to do the oracles.
How does it work?
Three
you
kinds.
Just ask it, what should I have for my dinner? Or, like, what? That's, like, that's facetious, I'm sorry. But what kind of things would you use it for?
You would ask it, what should I have for my dinner? And then just let the ancient wisdom flow over you as it told you, middle sun on high mountain, deep pool. With bamboo stalks. And I'm like, wow.
Jay Garden.
Wonder what that means.
Answers that.
Okay. Look, yeah, no, I used to, yeah, look, I was reading a lot of Jung. I was, yeah, anyway.
But they, oh yeah, they go and they find the, because it's based in this sort of alternate reality where, not alternate reality, it's reality in the book, but
yeah.
where the Germans and the Japanese won the war. What am I trying to say? So a guy writes a book about another alternate timeline where the Germans didn't win the war, but it's not quite our timeline. It's like a little bit different, but when she goes to visit him at the house and he's just like, you know, I can't remember what she's sort of asking him, where'd you get all this stuff from? And they ask the oracle, and it's like, it turns out that it's true. And then there's a bit, the Japanese guy at the end of it, he sort of has a brief vision where he doesn't know where he is. And are we supposed to think that that's him? I kind of missed that little bit at the end where he kind of briefly sort of, he's staring at a pendant or something, and he just kind of has this mad moment where he's kind of in a different, almost in a different world altogether. Like, he can't get a taxi and all this kind of stuff. But it didn't strike me at the time that this was kind of supposed to be him kind of slipping into like an alternate world and living in it for a little while and then kind of coming back. It was only a few minutes or something, I think. But the end of it did kind of lose me a little bit. I should
read that again. Well, yeah, it's a Philip K. Dick book. I mean, I don't think he necessarily always planned that far ahead.
No, but I think he was one of those guys that was just like still typing away when the postman was coming. It was just like, I have to get this before he gets here so I can put it in the bag. Yeah. Like, you know.
Yeah. What's that? Is that 100,000 words? Done. Out the door. Up the yard.
Listen to the money rolling in, but I don't think that really happened.
I don't really think it happened to him.
Have you seen the footage on YouTube where he's like speaking at some scientific sci-fi convention in France, and he starts going on about like how he believes that we're all being monitored by tape recorders from space or something. I don't know exactly what it was, and you can see all these French sci-fi fans going, really?
The subject of this speech is a topic which has been discovered recently and which may not exist at all. I may be talking about something that does not exist. Therefore, I'm free to say everything or nothing. I can hardly make an error if there is no such thing as orthogonal time. Orthogonal or right angle time is the topic of my speech. We are accustomed to supposing that all change takes place along the linear time axis from past to present to future. How can change take place outside of linear time at all?
By the end of The Man in the High Castle, if you had any time for it at all, Valis is very worth a look.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I have to say, I have
Valis here, but of course I don't leave the house anymore at all. But it's Valis is like an autobiography. It's like he started writing his autobiography and then couldn't help but actually make it about the space god who is watching us.
Okay.
Who the Romans broke and who sent Jesus Christ to fix the... It's a strange book.
Yeah, but it sounds like I'd read it though, because I'm getting kind of into that stuff.
Check it out. It's a brilliant book. Valis. Cool. Valis.
I read some of his early short stories, but like I just got, you know, these mega packs that you can get on Kindle. The Philip K. Dick mega pack. 50 stories for £2 or whatever. Like, and it's like, oh yeah, this is all the early shite ones, I think. There's like...
Never mind the quality.
Yeah. There's one where he like fucking hates his cuckoo clock or something. Like, you know,
I haven't heard that
one. It's not good.
He would take the clock down, and making sure that he had his thumb over the little door, he would wind it up. "Why do you put your thumb over the door?" Doris asked once. "You're supposed to." She raised an eyebrow. "Are you sure? I wonder if it isn't that you don't want him to come out while you're standing so close." "Why not?" "Maybe you're afraid of him." Larry laughed. He put the clock back on the wall and gingerly removed his thumb. When Doris wasn't looking, he examined his thumb. There was still a trace of the nick cut out of the soft part of it. Who or what had pecked at him?
Look, one of the great visionaries of the 50s and the 60s.
Yeah, no, I must...
Like, very much like Sidney Poitier and Rod Steiger.
Bringing it back. Thank you, Niall.
Classy. So, just classy.
So Sidney Poitier is waiting on a train, and while he's waiting on a train, a local businessman is murdered and robbed and left dead in the street. And of course, being somewhere in Tennessee in the 60s.
Mississippi.
An ignorant policeman drives along and sees a black man on his own in a train station, puts two and two together and gets 10 and arrests him, not realizing that he's a homicide detective himself and not one bit impressed with the whole thing.
No, he was not impressed. No, it was So, and then it all starts. They have to. He works together with Rod Steiger's quite racist policeman.
Yeah.
To solve the crime. This time I watched it, I did notice that the actual murder mystery is a wee bit. That's quite a leap of logic there.
Yeah, I was kind of thinking the same thing, because the spoilers for anyone who hasn't seen it, obviously, to talk about it, we're going to spoil this thing up and down. But the a guy drags his sister into the police station, saying that one of the policemen in the station has had sex with her and is now she's pregnant. She's only 16, and now she's pregnant, and this puts it in his head about abortions or something. Yeah, it's a bit.
Yeah. It's weird. Like, that was a real Hail Mary play there.
Because he just kind of, all of a sudden, he goes, he sort of gets, you see him get sort of like a bolt of inspiration or whatever, and he goes to one of the lads out in the cells and he starts asking about abortionists.
Listen, Harvey, man, if a guy knocks up a girl in this town, where can he go for help?
Barbershop.
Barbershop.
Borrow Mr. Andre's and cut your throat.
Well. But suppose Mr. Fanning's razor is too dull. Suppose he's got some real money to spread around.
I used to be a colored gal. But. She kept bumping her price, and I don't know if she's still in business.
What's her name?
Well, I ain't never had to look her up.
Man, you've only been in town 2 nights.
Yeah, what have you done?
It's really good. It kind of, but like, I don't know when I saw that first. When was fucking Brian Redden introducing films?
Oh, you're talking when we were 20 years 12 ago, 13, kind of thing, like, you know.
Oh, fuck, really?
I would have been a good one. Like would you have been in college? Like or?
No, I probably wouldn't have been. You're right.
They haven't done that kind of film introduction on RTE. You know, well, since, I don't know, I'm not a regular watcher of RTE anymore, but like, I can't imagine they've done that in a long time, you know?
Yeah. But this is like the first time that really struck me. Because it's not really about that. It's about those two guys, and they kind of carry it.
Yeah.
You have to sort of get involved with Virgil and what was his name? Gillespie.
Gillespie, yeah.
Virgil and Gillespie. Because it is kind of weird. He's definitely racist, but he's also kind of not a bad guy in his own way. Like, you know.
Well, he can see that Virgil knows what he's talking about. Like,
yeah.
And he's far more advanced, he comes from a bigger city, so he's got much more equipment, I suppose, to hand than they do in, what was the name of the place again? Sprat or something like
Sparta.
That? Sparta. Sparta, yeah.
This is Sparta!
But they've got bugger all like equipment and stuff for this kind of thing, and they can just like one thing I will say is that Sidney Poitier, he's forever picking things up out of like mats on the bottom of like cars and stuff like that, and just going like this and going, oh, that's obviously this particular plant that, you know, like it's like, that lad has them up in his racist fucking greenhouse up there, like, you know.
This is racist root here.
It kind of reminded me of Big Sleep a little bit, that scene, for some reason. Because isn't it the first scene in The Big Sleep in a greenhouse as well?
Is it?
I think so, yeah. It's an old book.
Yeah, you're right. He goes to see him. But his daughters are fucking getting out of hand. Dan. You need to take them in hand.
That was weird.
Michael says either you take care of your wife or he will.
We did that in the previous one, wasn't it?
I think we did. Didn't we? We probably did.
But
It was not bad.
So that's weird. So what?
Lauren Bacall.
Yeah, it's actually a great movie. It's just huge chunks missing out of the plot, though. When you read the book, it fills in an awful lot of that stuff.
Okay, this is like there might be stuff missing out of the Heat of the Night plot as well.
Because it's based on the book as well, right?
Yeah, but everybody seems to think this sounds a bit like a Godfather. Everybody seems to think that the book wasn't that good, really.
I was listening to interviews.
Yeah, Mario Puzo didn't fucking seem much like a James Joyce now in any of the interviews I saw.
It's no Philip K. Dick, but, that lad.
Yeah, no, in fairness, yeah, James Joyce probably didn't seem like James Joyce. He was a drunken fucking wastrel, and Philip K. Dick was a fucking paranoid schizophrenic, basically. Mario Puzo's probably fair enough. Maybe, yeah, Puzo's probably giving him a hard rap. He just needed the money, man. He just needed to get that book out. He owed some nasty people a lot of money.
I read that somewhere. Wasn't it literally to pay off a gambling debt? He thought, I'll just knock out some shit about like the mafia.
The mafia.
A couple of them must have done some serious classing up of that.
Yeah. I believe he did. That is the story. Like, well, I think that's very much the story Coppola tells, yes. But But I have no reason not to believe it. I love those films. We should do those films.
Yeah, because I need to watch the second one again. I said some pretty ignorant shit about the second Godfather film on our first episode back.
Did you? What'd you say? Were we talking about the Godfather?
Yeah, just briefly. Yeah, I said I thought it was boring, the second one.
Damn, you prick.
Well, yeah, I don't mind watching it again when it comes back around to your turn, if you want to do that.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, okay.
We'll watch it in 80, 15-minute segments.
Yeah. Didn't they recut the whole thing with a load of missing stuff chopped back into it? Oh, they made
some 7-hour version of it, like
All chronologically starts in Sicily and just goes through.
I think it was for TV. I think it was on over 3 nights or something. Like, I don't think it was. Did you watch The Irishman?
I tried to watch The Irishman.
Did you enjoy it, or did you just sort of not get back to it, or did you say fuck that? I'm done.
I didn't get. Well, no, I actually switched off, going fuck that. Robert De Niro was beating the shit out of some guy at a shop. And it was the exact same thing watching Captain Marvel, watching the technology is amazing. That technology can really make you look younger.
Right.
Yeah, the de-aging stuff. And then anyone who they're de-aging has to move. And it's just like, oh, that's an old man. It's just, I couldn't, like when De Niro started beating your... De Niro started beating the shit out of your man.
Really slowly.
He could hardly move. Yeah. It looked like he was hurting him. So, you know, this'll hurt me more than it'll hurt you. Yeah, fucking locks it out, granddad.
That's ludicrous. I couldn't bring myself to actually sit down and watch it, man. Even it just looks so boring. And, like, we've seen it. Like, obviously, I haven't seen it. But it just... He's done all this stuff before. Like, I don't... Like, he's gonna... Like, was he meditating on his own meditation of the mobster film? Give me a fucking break. You know, do you know what I mean? Like...
Yeah. But it's he said it about he said it with those Marvel films that they're just funfair rides. It's just all the same stuff. It's like, Martin, come on, man, you're just made the Irishman. For fuck's sake, please. Something different. Make a light romantic comedy and then give out about the sameness of other people's stuff.
But sometimes when he's bouncing off his own track is when he kind of makes his best stuff. Like, did you ever see After Hours?
No. Like, you told me about that before.
It's really good. Like, I haven't seen it in a long time, but it's the film he made after Raging Bull, I think, when someone said to him, you just need to make a cheap film that people can watch without vomiting. You know, like, no one, like...
Why don't you just go home?
I've been asking myself that one all night long.
So what happened? Why can't you?
I met this girl tonight, okay, in a coffee shop.
I feel like something incredible is really going to happen here.
So when I got home, I gave her a call. On the cab on the way down here, all my money flew out the window. I didn't really get along with her that well.
What's the matter?
I said, I want to see a plaster of Paris bagel and cream cheese paperweight. Now cough it up. So I left.
Kiki!
So I haven't got enough money to get home. Until I meet this bartender who wanted to lend me the money.
That's all right. Get it. That's all right.
Good boy.
So I go back to the girl's apartment, but her roommate's really pissed off at me for the way I treated her friend.
This the guy?
Hi. So I march right in there to apologize.
Come on.
But she'd already killed herself. I was too late.
Oh, wow.
Lighten up. What is this?
I'm in big trouble. I mean, big trouble. Now, this part, you're going to say, oh, you're lying to me. Don't lie to me. But it's true. Mohawk this guy. Yeah, Mohawk.
like Raging Bull, you can't doubt its artistic merits, but Jesus Christ, 2 hours in the company of that man is hard going, like, tough. You know.
It's tough. Yeah, they're very good films. They can be tough watches sometimes, but I like them, you know. I do like them.
But that's why...
The Irishman. No, that's all. Oh,
right, okay. But that's why After Hours was so good, because it's still a Scorsese film, but it's also a Scorsese film where he's thinking, people might end up actually watching this when I'm finished it, like, you know, or whatever. But I think that's one of the things that made the Heat of the Night so watchable, is that it was still a good film. You know, it wasn't...
Yeah.
I mean, obviously there's a lot of racism in it, because that's the story. But they managed to make it still watchable. You didn't switch it off going, oh my God, I can't watch anymore. This is rough going, like, you know. Like you were saying, that maybe the last sort of threads of the mystery are a bit sort of fumbly, but it does keep your interest through the whole film, though.
It's not always. Sometimes it's really obvious. There's a really famous scene in it where an old white man slaps Sidney Poitier in the face for asking him questions. And that is really... That's very famous. Apparently, Poitier and Steiger, they both lived in New York. They used to go to the film. and sit in the back, get seats together and sit in the back just to hear the audience's reaction when Sidney Poitier slaps the dude back.
It's a big moment, to be fair, because that guy is like... he's like the original racist man. He's like... racist, like...
May I have Henry fetch us something? Some light refreshment?
No, thank you. We're right the way we are.
Oh, I'll have something cold. Something soft. Anything.
Henry, bring in a pitcher of lemonade. I have one, too.
Yes, sir.
Oh, I didn't know it was possible to grow this species locally.
Oh, you like flowers?
I do.
Well, Mr. Tibbs, do you know anything about orchids? Well,
not very much, but I do like them.
Well, let me show you. Endicott's Folly. What do you think?
It's beautiful. It's breathtaking.
Have you a favorite, Mr. Tibbs?
Well, I am partial to any of the epiphytics.
Why, isn't that remarkable?
But it's cleverly done. Like, it's like he asks, he's all very civil with Virgil and this good, and he asks Virgil what his favorite flower is, and Virgil gives him some kind of very complicated name. And he just goes, oh, isn't that remarkable? Just like, oh, look at that black guy with his Latin. But there's a lot of that, even in the drive up to the house, Gillespie, they're driving through the cotton fields and all the people are picking cotton. And of course, everyone picking the cotton is black. And Gillespie just turns to him and goes, none of that for you, huh, Virgil?
Oh, man. I didn't think that was still happening in the 60s.
Well, they weren't slaves in the 60s.
I didn't realize
you had to pay them.
But I didn't realize that it was still... I didn't realize that industry still worked in that way, where it was all, you know, African-American workers working for very low wages, I'd imagine. I didn't realize that was still going on in the 60s. Like, that was my...
I would imagine there's still... Maybe they probably have machines now, but there's still people working in the fields. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm not saying it was a smart thing to think, but I was watching it going, Jesus, this doesn't look like... I wouldn't have assumed this was a bit more advanced than this in the 60s, you know?
Yeah, well, look, apparently not. Look, when you got cheap labor, you don't need a machine.
I suppose that's true.
See, and now it's happening. Now everything's being replaced by machines, and that's your other problem.
I mean,
when there's nothing left to do that a machine can't do better, what happens to the rest of us?
Like, but even in terms of like customer service, what I'm doing, it's more and more being done by like bots and stuff like that. You're like, eventually, like, it wouldn't take too much for a bot to be smarter than me now. You know, they're well on their way. You know.
Yeah, I know the feeling. Like, you show up to your emails in the morning, and it's like, oh, I bet you there's a computer wouldn't have made that mistake.
Yeah, exactly.
That already exists. I bet there's a commercially available computer that you could buy in PC World. I wouldn't have made that mistake.
Don't tell anyone. They might not know.
Oh, look, it's a mental one. I really love the film. It really does. But it hangs on those two guys. That's what it's about.
Yeah, yeah.
That's,
I mean, even the guys playing the other policemen in it, it's not like they're not the best actors going or anything. Like, it really does kind of hang on the other two guys.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, that's true. But it's just the relationship as they kind of come to... Do they like each other? I don't know. Maybe they do. But they respect each other, definitely, by the end.
Well, he definitely respects him. Gillespie respects him. I'm not sure how much... I think... Look, obviously there's a sequel. I don't know what way the sequel goes, but I think Sydney Poitier, in my head, I was watching it, and you know, I think Sydney Poitier got on that train and thought, "Fucking, just glad enough to talk to that prick anymore." Like, you know, that's that done with.
You reckon?
I think so. Yeah, I don't know. I can't see them
maybe
becoming like a partnership solving murders left and right. The best in the
biz. But he was, yeah, but he wasn't like. There was a definite chip on Virgil's shoulders. I thought Poitier played that well. Like, he went after Endicott. Like, that whole Fernroot thing turns out to be fuck all news to anybody. Like, it was totally wrong. The plans. Nothing to do with that guy.
Well, he said it later in the film. He said, like, I went after him, or I wanted it to be him for personal reasons.
Yeah. Yes, but also... Also, when Gillespie gets him to come back into the town to help him with the investigation, he doesn't like. He's not appealing to him as a policeman. He goes, I can go and call your chief and get him. I can go and call your chief, get him to make you stay here and help us. But I don't think. But you're not going to make me do that. You're not going to make me do that because you want to prove you're better than us anyway. And
he doesn't say no.
He doesn't say no. Yeah. It's a weird. Sort of, it's very cynical. It was cynical in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
I still think you're being kind of hard. I think there was a sense. I mean, Gillespie was like, Gillespie, after Poitier slaps your man, who slapped him first, obviously.
Yeah, yeah.
Spoilers, sorry. But after Gillespie slaps that guy, after Virgil slaps that guy, Gillespie goes to talk to the mayor and says, we have to get him out of here. He's fucked. He's just fucked it all up. He's not going to survive another night in the town. And the mayor says, you know, the last chief would have shot him on the spot.
Yeah.
And Gillespie just has to kind of chaw away.
Yeah.
Just says nothing and gets in the car and walks away.
There is one scene where he spits out that gun, and then the next scene he's chewing it again. Because they saw him spit it out. I was like, thank Christ. And then the next scene he's...
Well, they sell it in Pakistan. Yeah. That's how they hook you.
That's how they get you.
Yeah. Oh, they made me buy these six all at once. I am not excusing obvious abject racism, but I don't think Gillespie was a bad guy either. I think it was a terrible character flaw, but I think where he came from, what was he going to do? Like he outgrew it. He overcame it. Like I think he respected Virgil very much at the end.
For the town he was living in, he certainly wasn't the worst of them. Like, you know.
Well, no, he definitely wasn't the worst. Definitely. But I liked it. I love that film. I love that buddy cop shit.
Do you think
that we were talking about Lethal Weapon last week, weren't we?
Yeah, we were. Yeah, and it's funny we were talking about. It kind of made me think a bit of Dolomite as well, because I was watching it thinking, because I think, didn't Sidney Poitier have kind of a lot on his shoulders with every one of these films, because they were all kind of racially charged? I wonder.
Yeah, he what else was he in? To Soar with Love, he was in Look, Guess Who's Coming to Dinner.
Yeah,
he was in a lot of that stuff. To Soar with Love.
Is that To Soar with Love? Okay. I was wondering, did he like,
and Sneakers,
and so, let's not forget Sneakers. I was wondering, like, did he, maybe he didn't even know anything about the blaxploitation thing that came a few years later, but I wonder, did he watch those films and think, God, they're just kind of having crack as well as, you know, being the, you know, the,
look, yeah, he
having
yeah,
the whole weight of the African American community on his shoulders, like, you know.
Yeah, but man, he was able to bear it. He was shit cool. Do you know, tell me this. I discovered this when I was just reading up about this film. I was not aware of this. Maybe everybody knows this and I'm just an idiot. But did you know he directed Stir Crazy?
No.
The Richard Pryor, Gene Wilder film. That was Sidney Poitier. Sidney Poitier directed that.
I didn't realize he directed anything. I thought he was just an actor. Like,
yeah, no, neither did I. Wow. But I was like, fuck. So maybe he watched those films and he thought, maybe I can have some fun too.
Yeah, because you can see the, like, they took elements of it for things like Shaft and these kind of things. Like, you know, even the music, like, the Quincy Jones kind of funky music, you can see that in those later films, but they've really funked it up. Like, it gets, they're almost like music videos, some of them, like, you know. What do you call it, Dolomite last week, and it's all like doing kung fu and car chases and all this kind of stuff, and it's still sort of in its own wee way, it is still sort of racially charged and making a point, you know. I wonder that he would he have liked a bit of that and not have to be a spokesman all the time, you know.
Yeah, have to be held to a higher standard, but he was well fit for it. He's a shit cool guy. Like, I love Sidney Poitier.
I haven't seen those other two films that you mentioned, and then you were saying there is a sequel, like a sort of an exploitation-y sequel. Is it Good Night, Mr. Tibbs, or something?
Good Night, Mr. Tibbs. No, it's they call me Mr. Tibbs. Is it? Maybe it is called Good Night, Mr. Tibbs.
I don't know. I'm thinking of Good Night.
No, are you thinking of Good Night, Mr. Chips?
Yeah, that must be it.
Because they call me Mr. Tibbs, but there's nothing to it really. Like, it's not the same kind of film at all. If you can't find They Call Me Mr. Tibbs, just look out of Columbo, you'll get the exact same.
In the heat of the night, Virgil Tibbs got the killer. In his new movie, he's not sure he wants to. Sidney Poitier, Martin Landau, in
They Call Me Mr. Tibbs.
I think she's been strangled too. It'll take the autopsy.
All right, show me the neck.
Couldn't be shorter if he bit him.
Maybe you ought to pass this one.
You killed the wrong man.
Oh, I knew it was something to reverse back to, and it's not even a big thing, but I was saying to you at the start before we connected, you mentioned the same thing. You mentioned Columbo, and I said, I'm always mad for Columbo when I go to a hotel, and you were like, what? I don't know what it is, right? But the hotel channels, I don't have Sky in the house, right? But when you go to a hotel, they've got those channels. You know, when you go further than the channels, and you've got like things called like Sony Entertainment and these kind of channels, and they're almost always showing Murder, She Wrote or Columbo. So anytime, like, Kat and I have gone to hotels like and watched four Columbos in a row or something, like, or like a rakish Murder, She Wrote, like, you know, because it just happened to be on. And like
the hotel experience after a certain age, the hotel experience, I've never seen it captured like on a film. Hotels are, we'll go for a romantic couple's break, and then it never in the film turns into four episodes of Columbo.
No.
But my experience of hotel rooms like that is, look, they have the money pit on. You could watch the money pit. And then it's followed immediately by the barbs. Our night is sorted.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're saying, yeah. I love hotels. Like, there's something about it. Like, you just like, I'm just going to, the only furniture is a bed. So you're just going to, sometimes there's an old couch, like, you know, but they're never, it's never facing the television. It's always sort of away in a corner kind of thing, like, you know.
No, just lay in the bed and watch the telly.
Yeah, and you're literally like, I'll do, and especially because maybe it's been the same for you, like, when you're, like, and I don't know what your bathroom facilities are like, but I know your house is it getting done up in the progress.
Okay, I have bathroom.
But what I was going to say was, like, at the minute we have a bath, we don't have a shower.
I've been shitting in a pit, Dan.
Well, literally, yeah.
I'm shitting directly into the pipe out the backyard.
Stick it out the floor. But what was I going to say? So we have a bath. We don't have a shower. So the first thing either of us do when we get to a hotel is like, oh, I'm taking a shower straight away, getting in that shower, having a shower.
Oh,
like,
really?
Might have 3 showers in 2 days, like, you know, just to get the.
Cause I have a shower. I don't have a bath. But I still, I can't get comfortable in a hotel bath. I couldn't take a hotel bath.
No, but that's what I mean. Neither would I. But the shower straight in, let's be having you.
Yeah, but. Okay. But I don't think of the shower as a luxury thing.
It doesn't.
Whereas a bath can be very sort of get some bath candles.
Is yeah, it, but a shower gets you cleaner.
Oh,
because you're in to clean yourself.
Makes sense.
You're not. You're not sort of in there for a while, and then eventually you're just lying in a sort of lukewarm pool of your own sheddings. You know.
Oh yeah. Okay. I'm not a bath person either. But hotel baths, in my experience, are tiny wee things.
Yeah, they are. No, I wouldn't recommend a hotel bath. You don't know whose arse has been in there either.
No, that's true. Well, yeah, that's true. So I remember trying to join someone in a hotel bath, and that was, frankly, that made you, oh, come on, maybe they have Columbo on. It was just not. Like, I can't fit in this on my own. This would be a squeeze. This is not going. Oh, no. There's nothing going to be happening here, I'm afraid.
And anyway. Did someone make the call, or was it just like you trying to muscle in there and you?
I was in for a while. I was in for a while, and I was just like, I can't keep. No, this isn't going to happen. No, sorry, I'm leaving.
You need a tub for that kind of thing, like a circular. You know, like it can't just be like
or a clamshell,
an oblong bath. You know, like an lime green fucking. You know, like an council house.
What kind of 70s hotels
bath.
Do you?
Yeah, like it should be in an episode of Rising Damp or something. Like,
I loved Rising Damp. Did you know? But did you ever stay in an Easy Hotel?
I don't believe so. What's an Easy Hotel?
It's like EasyJet owns them. They're orange. They're bright orange and white and plastic. But they have like a glass bathroom. It's weird. The door sort of seals it off. And then, but if you open the bathroom door, it's because it's such a tiny little room. Like they're tight. I stayed in one of these in Amsterdam once with the lads. Mick and Cam went over and we stayed in an Easy Hotel. But we got a room each because, you know, just for... What do you call? What would you call it? Because hope springs eternal, man. But it was rather unnecessary, except for the fact that an Easy Hotel bedroom is—it's just a matchbox. It's a matchbox,
yeah.
And the door of the bathroom functions as both the door of the bathroom and the shower door, and you're kind of sealing yourself in, whether it's open or closed. One's open, and the other's closed.
What you're saying, yeah. I think I've stayed.
It's just like a glass box in the corner of the room that. It's weird. It's weird, but
it's a wonder of design, to be fair.
Well, yeah, I was vaguely impressed, while at the same time, thinking, no one would ever do this in their house. It simply wouldn't happen.
No, you wouldn't, because it'd just be like, why would I? No, you should have some amount of luxury in your own house. Like, you know, you don't have to design it like it's an EasyJet bathroom.
Yeah. Oh, look. Here, come here. Jim Steinman died.
The first person I thought of was Patrick Hook when I read that.
Me too. I texted him. Poor Jim Steinman's gone, and I got the text back. He's dead. So I don't know whether that was. I don't know whether that was a question. It was really late at night, so I don't know whether that was a question. And I was going like, yeah, Google it. Whatever. Or whether he was just stating it.
Yeah, that's the worst of my text, because you're just like, did they forget the question mark? Or although as quickly as it would take you to text he's dead, you could Google it.
Yeah.
You know, it'd be the same, just two words like or whatever. But yeah, I saw a lot of songwriters sort of jump to pay tribute to him, because they were kind of saying the guy had balls. Of steel.
He's very distinctive.
Yeah, I mean, you
can't take that away.
I mean, you like what you like, but you can't really take it away from him that he wrote massive tunes that were huge hits, and
yeah,
were also batshit crazy. Some of them, like, no pun intended, but like some of them were just banana. Like, I could do anything for love, but I won't do that. is so long. And it's...
What is that?
But I don't think he says... This is the thing. I don't think they say it at all in the song. And it's... But you listen to the opening bars of it, and 9 minutes or whatever it is have passed, and you're like, Jesus, I lasted the distance with it. Like, you know, and you don't really feel it. Like, it's a really, like, it's kind of a knack. You know, he just, I don't know, yeah. The guy had his thing, and he was very good at being Jim Steinman, you know. And I would do anything for love. I'd run right into hell and back. I would do anything for love. I'll never lie to you, and that's a fact. But I'll never forget the way you feel right now. Oh no, no way. And I would do. I think back in the day accused him of kind of ripping off Bruce Springsteen, I think, for that E Street Band kind of sound. Like, if you listen to a Springsteen tune like Jungle Land, it's that kind of epic sound, very similar to the sound that they would have gotten on Bad Out of Hell. From the churches to the jails, tonight all is silence in the world. As we take our stand. Don't think A,
it's not the same.
They weren't as dramatic. Like, Jim Steinman fucking thrived on drama, and B, you had Meatloaf singing the fucking things, and you know, like, love him or hate him, like, you know, I don't think anybody hates Meatloaf. That'd be a stretch.
Who hates Meatloaf?
Yeah. But it might not necessarily be your thing, but that guy sold those stupendously stupid songs, like, you know.
Yeah. Well, because he came from musical theater.
Yeah. Meatloaf. Yeah.
So I suppose he was used to it. Neve always said that about him. Neve always said, well, it's like it's musical theater for working class straight white men.
Oh.
That's what Jim Steinman
Jesus,
did.
Jesus, that hits the nail on the head. That's a good...
it kind of does, doesn't it?
That's a good soundbite, yeah. Fuck, she's right. Because generally speaking, white lads in historically can really handle musical theatre because, yeah, it's made by a lot of...
Yeah, but they could handle... I wouldn't do anything for love. Shane O'Reilly was... we were talking about it when he died on the group chat, and Shane O'Reilly was eulogising it and lionising it. So there was that... Bad Out of Hell was that generation's White Ladder. It was just everybody owned it and everybody listened to it.
I suppose, yeah, everybody did own White Ladder. I don't like David Gray. I like certain songs off that album. But
bollocks you are, Dan.
But then the next one came out and it's just like, oh, he's just fucking... He's just like a low-rent Mike Scott or something. Like, you know, it's just like... You know, and see, White Ladder kind of works.
I wish people could have seen your face.
White Ladder works because it hit that kind of, that rave kind of, well, the rave was kind of done by that point, but there was a kind of chill out thing happening in the late 90s, early 2000s. And he was smart enough to get a few remixes done of some of the songs off White Ladder. Like, that remix of Please Forgive Me is great. It's much better than the version that's on the album.
I don't know of a remix version of
Please Forgive Me. If you heard it, I think it was the version of the video, like, you know, but I think he got some of that stuff kind of remixed and it did well in that sense. But the actual album itself, like, some of it's interminable. Like, say that version, that Soft Cell song he does, say hello, wave goodbye, whatever that is. It's like, it's fucking nearly 10 minutes. Like, yeah, it is Soft Cell, yeah.
Ruddy hell, it's Soft Cell.
And then he starts throwing in bits of Into the Mystic at the end of it, and you're just like, oh my god, man, this isn't... I don't like your music, David. I'm sorry.
I want to rock your gypsy soul, yeah. David.
Did you see that Van Morrison's giving out about his Corona tunes? Did you see he put out some coronavirus protest songs? And he was giving out that, well, the reason no one heard them is because of lack of freedom of speech. It's like, no, mate, they were on fucking YouTube. It's no one censored you. Just no one fucking wanted them. Like, you know, they were I didn't even know that. No one was preventing you from spreading your stupid message. Like, you know. Stand and deliver. You've let them put the fear on you. Stand and deliver. But not a word you heard was true. And if there's nothing you can say, there may be nothing you can do. Do you wanna be a free man? Or do you wanna be a slave? Do you wanna be a free man? Or do you wanna be a slave? Chains until you're lying in the grave.
Do you know what I heard lately? Him doing Comfortably Numb.
Oh, I've heard that. Yeah, it's actually, I can't remember whether I liked it or not. Actually, it's a long time ago.
I liked it. What can I tell you?
Did you hear Christy doing Shine On You Crazy Diamond?
No, Christy Moore.
Christy Moore does a version of Shine On You Crazy Diamond, yeah.
I should have to check that out.
You shine like the sun. It's good, actually. His voice kind of suits it.
Okay.
You're caught in the crossfire. It's pretty good.
Okay. What are we talking about?
Yeah, fan complaining. Yeah, freedom of speech was.
Tell me this.
Eric Clapton, I think we can all agree. Guitar on a couple of boring bastards. Who cares what they have to say? Anyway, sorry.
He doesn't help himself, man. He's like, oh, do I want to hear moaning in D minor?
Don't get me wrong, I keep interrupting your question. I'd have Astral Weeks all day long because you have to, because that's how long it is. But like, but some of it, like, is amazing. Like, you know, like, the stuff on Bend and Fleece and these kind of albums. But, like, don't make me listen to your coronavirus tunes, man. Anyway, sorry, you were going to ask...
I was going to ask you what was up with Morrissey this week.
They took the piss out of him on The Simpsons. They did, like, a sort of a Morrissey-esque singer voiced by Benedict Cumberbatch on The Simpsons who... gives up on it. I think Lisa discovers them on Spotify or something and gets into them, and then she discovers that the guy who was like a vegan activist back in the day is now just like a fat lad on stage with burgers, and it's really obviously supposed to be Morrissey, and he was really annoyed about it. Like, and you just think, fuck off, Morrissey. Like I didn't see the episode, but I have to assume, just with the way The Simpsons, the way it is at the minute, I have to imagine it was pretty heavy-handed. I'm sure it wasn't that clever, you know.
Simpsons has been way too heavy-handed for a long time.
Yeah, but one of the lines in Morrissey's...
fuck Morrissey.
Yeah, fuck him. Like, one of the lines in his big thing he put up on his website or whatever was, like, in a world obsessed with hate laws, what law is there to protect me? You're just like, what? The middle-aged, wealthy white man? I think there's a few. It's like, fucking hell.
It did my heart good there last year. When was it that people started turning on him?
Well, he wore not a BNP pin, but he wore a pin of some affiliation of the BNP. Some organization that's affiliated with the BNP. He wore their pin on an American chat show. And that's what people were like. And then he said something like, it's not the exact quote, but it's something like, it's not racist to want to just hang out with people of your own race. You're just like, okay, I think it is, but you know, you're obviously living in your own fucking bubble, so whatever you think yourself, like.
In the heat of the night, how far we've come.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. But it's
it
just doesn't
look good. I fucking hate Morrissey. I have always hated Morrissey. He's a pretentious cunt. He was always a pretentious cunt. There's literally nothing I find attractive in the man whatsoever. And it irritates me that so many people love him so dearly and rate him so highly. Because what are they seeing that I'm... What are they seeing? Look at him, like... And when it started turning on him, I was like, oh, you have had this coming a long time. You whingy, moany bastard.
Like, I liked the Smiths. I did like them. I wasn't a Morrissey head as such. I thought he had moments of good lyrics, and I thought he had moments of funny lyrics.
For once in my life, let me get what I want.
Please, please. Yeah.
Lord knows it would be the first time. I was like, fuck off.
But musically, that's beautiful though, that track.
Oh, fuck off. Yeah, I can't see past it.
I love that.
And I was arguing with Neve about this, and she was like, this might have been the same day we were arguing about Robin Hood. Maybe I was turned up to 11 a wee bit that day. But she was like, oh, fuck off. Like, are you telling me Bob Dylan never had moany self-pity and self-aggrandizing lyrics? And I was like, I think... Yes, he did.
It's hard to...
But, first of all, I think quite often there was a tone of sarcasm there that maybe I'm giving him too much credit for
but
that.
Also, Dylan will do things like, she said she shot a man named Gray and took his bride to Italy or whatever. Like, I don't know, I feel like Dylan's songs opened out, whereas Morrissey's were just like... whatever was happening just directly in the front of his head, that's what he wrote about. Whereas Dylan was like writing romance in Durango and, you know, like it was,
And
emotionally as well as actually geographically, it was like an atlas, like, you know.
Yes. And I think then Blood on the Tracks was kind of a grown-up moment for Dylan where he was like, oh, I think I might have fucked everything up.
Yeah.
And Morrissey... I am not well versed in Morrissey lore, but I have yet to see that Morrissey moment. I have yet to see it. And I'll tell you what, I'll fucking die wanting to see it, because that cunt is not going to have that kind of moment of self-reflection. He's never self-reflected, not once in all his entire life, not even briefly at a funeral. He's very irritating.
I'm a big fan of Johnny Marr, though. I like the Smiths musically because I like Johnny Marr. But yeah, I know what you're saying. But, like, the thing is, the man who... What was the line in fucking Big Mouth Strikes Again? Sweetness, I was only joking when I said you should be bludgeoned in your bed. I just think the man who wrote that line has no fucking right to be getting up in arms about The Simpsons making fun of him, like, you know.
No, he does not. Anyway, Morrissey, what
a
prick.
I've long since stopped giving a shit about Morrissey. Like, you know,
poor what's his name died as well.
Jesus, how many deaths was there? Who died?
Liam Riley died. And Michael Collins, the man who almost walked on the moon, today died. But
Liam Riley died a while ago, though, didn't he?
Am I thinking Bagatelle?
Yeah, was that not a while ago?
What are you talking? Like a couple of weeks?
I think Liam Riley's dead a while. Yeah. I think it was before Christmas, like.
Was it? That long ago? I can't speak to that. I thought that... if you had asked me when Liam Riley died, I would have said like a fortnight ago.
No. I think it's longer. In my head, it's before Christmas, but I'm not... I didn't make a note of it, so I don't know, like, you know.
Anyway, he had a song about Paris. That's just what... That's what made me think of him there. Actually, it wasn't about Paris. There was one line about Paris.
Yeah,
wasn't
it's
there?
Probably that. Aren't most of his songs about the various seasons he spent in Dublin? That's bollocks. It's not true. That holds no water at all, that thing.
He did that Eurovision one. He did that Meet Me in Europe. Meet me in Paris on the Champs Elysees tonight.
We
must have been doing okay, like royalty wise.
Like, maybe
he wrote a lot of songs. Like "Summer in Dublin" is a big song, you know.
Yeah, but have you heard it played lately?
Dundalk FM used to play quite a bit. They put out the five most top played artists on Dundalk FM. I think it was the year before last, because there was that whole thing about how female artists aren't getting played on Irish radio. It was like the statistics are scandalous, but they went through the Dundalk playlists and the Bagatelle were the second most played act on the station. I'm sure it was just that song.
That's still okay if the Cars were number one.
No, I don't even think they were. The most played Irish. Okay, roll that back a little bit. The most played Irish act.
We're Bagatelle. Second most played.
And I think the most played Irish act was the Waterboys, who aren't Irish, so.
Still counts. We'll take it. That was Charlie High. That was Charlie Haughey's tax regime.
We'll take.
Brought in rock stars and tech millionaires.
Italian footballers.
And Italian footballers.
So
anyway, we didn't do an awful lot of talking about In the Heat of the Night, did we?
Okay. I think people get it.
It was a film of its time. It had a lot to say. It had a very strong, intelligent, and effective black guy in a leading role. Rod Steiger got the Oscar for it.
Wait, Rod Steiger got the Oscar for it?
Yeah, yeah.
God, do you think it'd be Sidney Poitier that would have gotten it?
He already had an Oscar, I think.
Oh, okay. Did he? What the for the. The one they remade as far as
that's the kind of thing I should have looked up, isn't it? I guess it was coming to dinner.
Who cares? Is that like? Yeah. Was he in Father of the Bride then as well, or is Father of the Bride a remake of Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, or is Father of the Bride its own thing that got remade with Steve Martin in it?
I thought, is Father of the Bride a remake?
Is it a re? I think it is a remake.
It is. What's his name was in it?
Am I thinking from
Guess Who's Coming to Dinner? Spencer Tracy. Yeah, I think you're right about that.
I'm getting mixed because Spencer Tracy's in both of those.
Spencer
films,
Tracy
right?
was in both. Oh, yeah, right. yeah, yeah.
That's a film I kind of want to watch again. That's bad. That's pretty good.
I could do a good quick Catherine Hepburn. Yeah, go on. Anyway. What's the film you want to watch again?
Father of the Bride, the Steve Martin one. I used to really like it when I was younger.
Yeah, me too.
Although
I think I had the second one for a while taped off the telly. That was not as good.
I don't think I've seen the second one, but remember there's a bit, and I think it's just a fairly basic sort of romantic comedy, but there's a bit in the first one that's like a very Steve Martin bit where he's just like, the pressure's getting to him and he's going around the supermarket.
The hot dogs.
And he's like, the buns, the packets of buns have more buns in them than dogs or whatever. And he's ripping buns out of bags and it's very funny. I am removing the superfluous buns.
That is a good film. I'd like
to watch it again.
Steve Martin was in a lot of good films.
Yeah.
People don't give him credit for a lot of them.
He's Steve Martin.
Oh, actually,
great.
No, they do, don't they?
I think he does okay. Yeah, him and Martin Short get a lot of credit. I haven't watched their thing where they did together.
Martin Short nearly got stuck in Ireland with COVID.
Oh, did he? Yeah.
Yeah, he was up in Armagh. He still has a pub, or cousin. Probably the uncle is dead, but his cousins have a pub up in Cross.
Oh, I didn't realize that at all. Wow. So he nearly got stuck. Matt Damon got stuck, didn't he?
Matt Damon did get stuck. He was in the plane after Martin Short. He was in the queue right behind Martin Short.
Oh, jeez. Unlucky.
I presume. I don't
know
how that works.
So not only do you not get to hang out with Martin Short in a plane, but you have to live in fucking, where was he, Dalkey or somewhere?
Yeah.
It's a dreadful place.
Oh, listen. Is it?
Oh, it's an awful place, yeah. I did some stag gigs down there.
Oh, yeah. Why? I would have thought it was very quiet and pleasant.
The nicer the area, the worse the gig's going to be.
Why is that?
Rich people don't find anything funny.
Rich people don't laugh.
They just don't. They have no sense of humor, man. It's a proven fact. They just don't have a sense of humor.
Rich people don't have a sense of humor.
I remember being in Dalkey doing like in some restaurant upstairs, no microphone, this kind of shite, like, and doing a bit about being on the dole, and they were looking at me like I was in an aquarium or something, like, you know, I was one of those sucker fish that goes up to the tank and goes I really enjoyed this film. Thanks for suggesting it, because it's kind of shameful I'd never seen it before. So enjoyed the fuck out of it.
Just a film,
it
was great. It's just a film.
It's just a film.
Just a film. You can't hurt a film's feelings.
So I've got two things in mind. But they're both music. Okay, so I'm going to give you the choice.
Right.
Cool. The first one would have been the Dylan album. Yeah, the Morrissey's box set of all his albums. All his solo
Morrissey
albums.
Or Steinman.
Not even the Good Smiths ones, all his solo albums.
Right.
No, I was thinking either Rough and Ready Ways, the Dylan album, which is great, but it's a bit long. Or
okay.
I can do you a mix of some Guided by Voices songs and we can talk about them. It's about 45 minutes.
Guided by Voices.
Yeah.
Well, I have never. Yeah. Well, being as how I have no idea what Guided by Voices are like, or are about, or are thinking, or where they are, or what they're doing. Can we go Guided by Voices?
Yeah, absolutely. So, do you still have a Spotify account?
I do. Yeah.
Okay, I actually have a mix ready to go. I was did it the other day when I was bored, so I'll send it to you when I get a chance.
All right, fair play. Cool, cool.
So thanks very much for listening, everyone, and tell your friends if you're digging it.
Just a reminder, we're not diagnosing anyone in this podcast, just speculating about what might be happening in a situation
what is that?
Like this. That's, I can't remember his name, Grande, Dr. Grande, do you watch him?
No.
He's on YouTube. I have YouTube sometimes in the background playing and weird things come up. He does a lot of true crime stuff. Okay, he talks about true crime. Just a reminder, we're not diagnosing anyone in this video. Just speculating about what might have been happening
sometimes
in
I
a
think,
situation like this.
Sometimes I think I could cancel everything else and just use YouTube and I'd be fairly entertained.
Yeah, but... You go down rabbit holes with YouTube then.
Yeah.
I'm not a fan. Because I have caught myself like, I kind of have it on playing in the background when I'm working. And then after work, I just continue to watch YouTube. And it's a bad habit.
That's not true at all. I said I couldn't do that. I could easily do that. I could do that all day long. I don't know what the fuck I'm saying, like, you know, but I don't. Thankfully. But it sounds like you've got control of that.
Yeah. Tiger by the tail now, to be honest with you.
Well, when they start opening cafes and whatnot, Niall, maybe you'll be able to head out and do something else.
Yes, indeed. Hopefully. Right. Listen. Dan, it was good talking to you.
You too, Niall. I'll send you a Guided by Voices mixtape, Spotify playlist, post-haste.
Can we put that up for people to listen to?
Yeah, I can stick it up on the Facebook page.
Sounds good. Guided by Voices, eh?
Cool. All right, I'm looking forward to that. So that is it from us for this week. I've been Danny O'Hanlon.
I've been Niall McCann.
And thanks very much for listening to us. Cheerio.
Thanks, folks.